A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're looking at part two of how to run your best marathon.
Sam's back.
She's back. She's told you how to do your base training, your speed base. You're getting ready. It's the business end, Ben.
We've got more phases.
There's more phases.
Don't be phased by the next phase. Right?
Yeah, so we're talking about the kind of, I'm going to call it the action end of marathon training.
Yeah.
And maybe into the kind of tapering as well.
So, and we talk a little bit about recovery as well. We talk about the need of good quality food and rest.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes, please. Yeah. That sounds like
good
stuff.
Can I just do that bit of the marathon training?
I think that's important.
Okay. So I guess without further ado, should we get Sam back on?
This is part two of Running Your Best Marathon with Sam Murphy.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone.
Welcome back, Sam, to episode two of our Run Your Best Marathon series. And we left everyone on a cliffhanger last time. They're tuning back in to find out who done it.
They're still in their development phase.
In development phase, we talked previously about lactate threshold running, which is kind of the pace you can hold for an hour in race conditions. Am I right in thinking that maybe hill running would start to come in during this phase as well? And if so, what are the kind of marathon benefits of running quickly up a hill? Because it can be quite a hard sell, I think.
Yeah, so before I will answer that question. I'm not avoiding it, but it's also the time that we would make the speed work a little bit more specific. So rather than doing more of that sprint work that we were doing in the base phase, we're moving towards what listeners probably consider, you know, more traditional speed work. So working more at what VO2 max pace, so efforts that are sort of 2 minutes, 3 minutes, that kind of thing, a hard effort. And so coming back to hills, I mean, I consider hills to be, I mean, they are a session in themselves, but you've got to always think about what you're trying to achieve. So a hill session could actually be a session that is working on lactate threshold, or a hill session could be one that's working on your VO2 max, your aerobic capacity. So it could be either of those, depending on how you structure the session. So there's a session that I've got in the plan, which is one I think is such a good one to do for marathon training, where you're running up and down a hill continuously, but not too steep a hill and not at a sort of breakneck speed. So you're running at a pace that would elicit that same feeling of it being comfortably hard to keep that pace going. So it's your same lactate threshold sort of effort level, but you're going up and down a hill, and the down isn't a recovery. You're running down the hill at the same effort level as you're running up. So the speed might be different, but the effort level feels the same. And we'll often use like landmarks such as lampposts or trees. So you might run up to a near tree, then back down, and then a next tree that's a bit further away, all the way back down, the next tree. And so you just keep going for, you know, maybe sort of 6 minutes or 8 minutes or something over 5 minutes. Otherwise, you'll just go too quick. And then you might take a little break and then repeat that again. And that's very different from a VO2 max hill session, where you would be running up the hill pretty fast and jog or walk back down, get a really good recovery so that you can put that sort of same amount of effort into it again. So in one, we're depleting our energy and then, you know, getting a recovery and keeping going. And in the other, we are, you know, pushing through and keeping going without the recovery, but we're at a lower intensity, if that makes sense. So they're both hill sessions, but you know, very different focuses.
And that really, that session sounds great for sort of replicating the sort of surges of race day and how those sorts of conditions, you know, there are, as much as you'd like to run a consistent even pace for the whole 26.2 miles, it's never going to be that easy. So you kind of like it does sort of help with the conditioning. So from the base, which was all sort of very low intensity mileage increasing, where are these sessions slotting in now? Are we in this development phase? We've still got the mileage happening, or is that now being reduced? Yeah. And these sessions are now coming in to sort of supplement everything.
Yeah. So the mileage, you know, you've probably reached near enough the mileage that you're going to maintain through the program. So you're not having that challenge of keep building and building. You know, you've reached that point, and the mileage is going to be, it's going to fluctuate a little bit more now. So weeks where you've got a hard long run, you're not going to also do these really hard sessions, but weeks where we're going to drop the mileage on the long run, then we've got a little bit more energy to focus on these lactate threshold and VO2 max sessions. Nice. So it's not going to just be build on the long run front, but we are going to keep revisiting those longer distances. But we've got a little bit more leeway to work on intensity now as well.
So let's talk about marathon pace, Sam, because I guess we're now moving maybe into the specific phase. We're getting kind of close. Generally speaking, when do you think we should be talking about the specific phase? How many weeks out or weeks or months out from the race?
How much development do you need to get specific?
That's like a Malcolm Gladwell podcast,
isn't it?
I guess we're looking at about sort of, my programs are 16 weeks, and we're looking at about sort of 10 weeks to 12 weeks. When we're focusing on this specific phase.
Right. Okay, I see. Yeah,
so
yeah.
So it's the final 4 weeks of the whole, well, six to...
Of the time when you're still, before you've started to taper. Yeah.
And this is where kind of marathon pace is coming in. Does it matter in terms of like, because obviously people listening will have very different marathon goals. So how much marathon pace you do, is that dependent a little bit on how quick a marathon you're planning to do? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, you often see very, very sort of hugely marathon pace focused long runs being recommended. I think I would probably not. I mean, you could. There's a couple of ways you can do it. So you could do a session where you do little blocks at race pace in between blocks where you're running at an easier pace. So you've got a little bit of recovery in between. You can do runs where the first half is at a comfortable pace, and then the second half you go into your marathon pace. And that's a really good way of kind of replicating that fatigue that you're going to get in the latter stages of the race, but without, you know, exhausting yourself so much in training by doing all of it at race pace that you then, you know, take the rest of the week to feel recovered, you know. So then you're missing out on what training you were meant to be doing in that following week. I mean, I think it does depend somewhat on what your sort of marathon potential, your sort of capacity is going to be on the day. I mean, if you're running your first marathon and, you know, you're sort of not that confident in how good you've been feeling with your sort of longest runs, then to sort of set yourself the target of going out and running, you know, 12 miles at race pace is probably going to knock your confidence more than build it, which is one of the reasons for doing these kinds of runs is really about building your confidence and your mental focus. So you might want to sort of reduce that and do a little bit less at race pace. But another thing you can do is to include race pace runs as standalone runs within your training week in that specific phase. So it just really helps you lock onto what that pace feels like. And I think, you know, we're not talking about something that's kind of a movable feast like a lactate threshold session or a VO2 max session. You know, we're talking about a specific pace, which might be, you know, 10 minutes a mile or 8:30 a mile or whatever it is. So to get a real sense of being able to, you know that you're running at that pace without having to look at your watch all the time to see if you're running at that pace is really valuable. It's a great little game you can play when you're out training as well. You're like, okay, I think I'm definitely at 9 minute miles now, and then you look and it's very gratifying to find that you are
you're on it,
you know, within a few seconds. Or you might be horrified and find that you're
just 12
way
minute miling
out.
Yeah.
But some days it will be like that. Like, there's no, you do go out and you think I'm on the money with this, and you look down and you're like a minute slower than you should be or whatever.
Yeah.
You go, that's
true.
Where I'm
blame,
at today.
Blame the watch at that point.
Yeah, it's true.
But there is a caveat to that, of course. You know, I think pace is very important, and pace is, you know, on the day, it you know, pace is an absolute, isn't it? It's not going to change. Just, you know, it's a fixed thing. But when you're training, you do have to sort of bear in mind that your pace isn't going to always be as consistent as you would like it to be. There's going to be traffic lights and zebra crossings to wait at, and there's going to be gates to open or stiles to climb over, or, you know, soft ground underfoot, or hills that to go up and down. All sorts of things are going to affect your pace. So don't sort of cling doggedly onto your set, you know, your goal pace, because you'll end up running sort of harder than you need to at certain points because you're trying to sort of catch up to get that you know, 8 minute mile or whatever that you were trying to achieve. And you don't need to do that. Yes, you do need to do it on the day, but then hopefully the conditions are not going to sort of prevent you from achieving that on the day.
And obviously everything else that you've done outside of these marathon pace sessions, all the hard work from the base phase into the development, and that's where really that end result comes from, not from, you know,
just one amazing
session where you absolutely nailed that pace.
Yeah,
it's time for an advert.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now back to the podcast.
Sam, you talk about dress rehearsal. So can you explain what that would look like in terms of sort of distance of run, pace, also I guess in terms of maybe what you're going to wear and eat on the day, and why you think it's important?
Yeah, I think it's good to do one of your not necessarily your peak long run, but one of your sort of last few long runs. So maybe at the sort of just the one just before you start tapering, or even one of the ones during the taper, and wearing the kit, which you should, but you know, if it's that near the race, you should know by then what you're going to be wearing, and going out wearing that kit and practicing your fueling strategy. So it's got to be a run that is long enough for you to need to practice your food strategy. But let's say you're going to run for 2 hours, and on the day you'll actually be running for close to 4 hours. Still carry the same amount of fuel that you're going to carry the day. Yeah. Don't just carry what you need for 2 hours, because let's see if you can actually, can you fit all those gels in your shorts? Yeah. I mean, let's let's see if they actually fit. Practice, you know, opening the gels. Are you going to stop running? Are you going to walk? Are you going to carry on running? Do that in your dress rehearsal just to see, you know, are you able to do that? And this is the time when you're going to find out whether those gels sit okay in your stomach when you're running at that sort of pace. And that's why it's important to do it on one of those later runs, because you're already going to be at the point where you're able to maintain a similar sort of pace that you're going to be running on race day.
Okay. Do you factor in like nutrition stuff in that base phase as well, Sam, then? Because if people are adding mileage and doing all that sort of stuff, is that when would you sort of people running for 2-3 hours at that point and that they're trialing the gels at that phase?
Oh yeah, 100%. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know there is, you know, there are different schools of thought about the need to take on energy. The huge consensus in terms of non-elite runners is that once you're running for longer than 90 minutes, that you will benefit in terms of your performance if you take on energy during the run. There's so much evidence to back that up. That yes, there are sort of some reasons to run without energy and in building your fat adaptation. So you know that is something that people can look into. But again, you know, thinking back to your stress pot, you know, is that something you want to start thinking about now if you've never thought about it before? Yeah. Just adding another sort of thing to deal with into the equation. Yeah. So I would recommend strongly that people do think, yes, I'm going to need to take energy on during this run. And although it's 90 minutes is the sort of the kind of cutoff point at which studies sort of say, yeah, it's pretty unequivocal that you need energy if you're going to be running for longer than that. It doesn't mean that you start taking it at 90 minutes. It should be something that you start taking right from the beginning of the run. The more you practice that, I mean, in my nutrition section of the book, you know, I know people who find it hard to take energy on board, and I know people who find it hard even to drink water and sort of say, oh well, you know, I find it really hard, so I just try and do without it. But you know, don't give up, because there's really good evidence that your body will adapt if you just gradually kind of persevere with it. And it's really, really worth doing, because you are going to be at a disadvantage if you can't take carbs on board, and particularly, you know, if you can't take water on board. So just give yourself, you know, be patient and allow yourself time to adapt to that. You know, even if you feel like it's sloshing around in your stomach now, or that you feel a bit nauseous, you know, try different brands, try different consistencies, try real food if you don't like, you know, designated sports products. But your body will adapt and can adapt to taking on more carbohydrate over time if you do, you know, do it regularly, practice it regularly.
You said before something, you're not a subscriber to the idea that you kind of build up your long run and then your final long run is 3 weeks out, and maybe a lot of that's a marathon pace. Some people even do these kind of 20-mile runs, but they almost race them, and they're like, yeah, got a 20-mile PB three weeks out from the marathon. It's like, you've almost done the marathon there, and now you're going to do another one. What's the alternative then, in terms of like, when would you put the last long run in someone's training diary ideally?
Well, in my plans, the peak long run comes at sort of about weeks 9 or 10, and then you revisit that run. The last time you revisit it is five weeks out is the last time that you do. That's the sort of peak distance is revisited for the last time. However, after that, you do have, you know, a 2 hour long run, which is a progression run, which goes from a sort of easy pace up to marathon pace, and then backs off, then it goes back to marathon pace. So it's a quite a challenging run of 2 hours in length. So it's still going to do everything you need it to do in terms of maintaining your endurance, boosting your marathon specific fitness, ability to hold that pace, all of those things. People need to get out of this mindset. It's so easy to believe that, you know, if you've done 20 miles, but then, you know, two weeks later you do a run that isn't 20 miles, that you're going to lose fitness as a result of that. Yeah. And that is just not the case. You know, your body will not lose fitness because you're doing less mileage in this other run, but there's going to be more intensity in that run. Plus, it's a part of the puzzle of all the other things that you're doing as well. So there is no, that I guarantee that if you follow this idea of not doing your last long run 3 weeks before and you've done it a bit before that, that, you know, you're not going to lose fitness from not doing your last long run 3 weeks before the race.
So we've done the base phase, we've done the development phase, we've been very specific. We've touched on nutrition, which has been great. And I think that this sort of like probably slides in a little bit with that, is that if we talk about the stress pot again, which you mentioned, but sort of the, all the elements of life coming together, recovery with the marathon, I feel like is worth a little mention in itself, because it fits in with nutrition and how you're sort of feeding your body and treating it well. What's your main bit of advice there, Sam, in terms of people who are taking on the marathon? What do they need to do in terms of recovery so that they're hitting those sessions, getting there full of energy, not damaging themselves, not adding more stress than they need to?
Yeah, I think nutrition, although we have already touched on it, I think nutrition is probably the number one that people need to think about. And that's it. I particularly think that's important because it's so often overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, that you think that the training is everything and all the other things are just kind of by the by, so you go and do a long run and then just not think at all about what you eat afterwards, when you eat afterwards, you know, go to the pub, have a few drinks, you've got the training in. So all of that stuff about getting your carbohydrate in and also protein post-run is really, really important. That would be my number one focus for recovery. And then my number two focus would be sleep. So getting enough sleep at night, but also taking naps. I know both of you have young children, so you need to nap when the kids nap.
They've stopped napping. Or one of them does, but the other one doesn't.
Mine don't. Unfortunately,
I'll need happily to reintroduce the naps.
I'll happily have a nap. It
can be one of the best. I think one of the nicest things about marathon training is you come back from your long run, eat some nice balanced granary toast with scrambled eggs, and then get the recovery tights on and just climb into bed.
That does sound good, actually.
That makes it all worthwhile for me.
Sam, we're gonna have to stop it there. But there's so much more we could talk about with the marathon. But thanks so much for giving us your insight into the 26.2 mile distance. For anyone who's listening, who's interested in your book, which will be many people, tell us the title again and how you can get hold of it.
Okay, so it's called Run Your Best Marathon: Your Trusted Guide to Training and Racing Better. It's published by Bloomsbury and it's available in all good bookshops, or if it's not, then you can get them to order it in for you. And from the big unfriendly place online.
Okay, lovely. Sam, thanks very, very much for your time. Really, really appreciate you coming on and offering so many great insights into the marathon. So I think people listening will get a lot from it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, good luck to everybody who's in training.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Sam Murphy, and to you, of course, for listening.
I know that you're now ready to run your best marathon because you've listened to part one and part two of How to Run Your Best Marathon with Sam Murphy on the Runner's World podcast. That's us. But if you just need extra additional help, you should subscribe to the magazine because that will help you along your journey. It supplements all the information that you'd ever need. Subscribe to the magazine for £5 and get 3 issues. That's a good deal. Or subscribe for the whole year and you get all the magazines, which is a better deal. Just Google subscribe Runner's World UK magazine, find the link. It's on the Hearst magazine site. You'll get some sort of introductory offer maybe if you're good. And you'll hear from us next week. So thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.